TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is a very special podcast that I recorded in San Diego during the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con 2012. I do the interviews on the fly with a handheld mic, so excuse the variation in sound quality because we're going to be in several different places. I try to get everybody's input on their Comic-Con experience, some of the panels they went to, and some of the pilots that they got to see. Sit back and enjoy.
Hey, TV Campfire, on the fly, I am getting Peter Parris's idea and point of view as far as he spent the day in Hall H with all the movie trailers.
Sony.
So all the Sony movie trailers. All right, give it to us.
Well, I started the day with the Resident Evil Roundtable, and Michelle Rodriguez was really colorful and, like, pretty funny. She kind of made jokes about her, because, you know, she got fired from Lost with the drinking, and one of the people that asked, she basically made a thing saying, oh, you know, when I was on the original Resident Evil, we were all in our 20s. She's like, now it's 10 years later, and everyone's got kids. Like, I don't think she's got kids or anything, and they're all, and so someone said, oh, well, so they don't get to go drinking out with you, what would you drink? And she's like, well, for me, you know, it's all Red Bull, and it sounded like she's basically making this allusion to all the trouble that she got into with Lost and
right. All
that kind of stuff. But she was really funny. Mila Jovovich, really nice. Everyone's cool, but...
You got your picture taken with her.
I did, with both of them. I was a huge Mila Jovovich fan, so that was a huge deal for me. Big nerd out. But I talked to Paul W. Ernest Anderson, the director, and he seemed pretty cool, and I asked him if he thought, because Screen Gems, which owns Sony, they make Underworld and they make Resident Evil, and they always seem to come out every other year. Like, this year we had the Underworld Awakening in 3D, and last year before we had Resident Evil, and I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And so I said, well, you know, what would you think of, like, a mashup, like Freddy versus Jason? Like, do Alice from Resident Evil and Selena, so you'd have the zombies and the lichens. And he laughed. He's like, I never thought of that.
It's like, brilliant.
I was
idea.
Like, that's my idea. You can have it for free. Take it. Run with it. So it was pretty cool. Now, all of them was good. I mean, you know, the Resident Evil movies, I just watched all four of them, and I think the first one holds up better than I thought. I think the fourth one's a lot of fun, especially in 3D. I mean, they're okay. They're not, like, the best movies ever, but they're fun.
I like the one where there are, like, multiple ones, the clones.
Yeah, that's the third one. I like that one, too.
I like that one.
And I'm really looking forward to the new one. The new one looks really big, and they brought all the... I mean, Michelle Rodriguez is back. So many characters seem to be back. They wouldn't tell us specifically how, but... and there's that whole... The hole in the trailer where Alice looks like she is in a suburban, perfect utopia, Raccoon City. But, of course... The dream ends and the zombies come out, and at least that's what's in the trailer. But the thing that was interesting to me was that then after I did that, I went to Hall H, which anybody who's been to Comic-Con is, it's like crazy busy, especially because it was Walking Dead and Game of Thrones were before the Sony movies, which I didn't get to, but like it was crazy. And of course, after Game of Thrones, tons of people left, obviously, and I got in, but I only got in probably for the end of the Resident Evil panel, but I talked to them myself, so that was fine. But after that, Sony, big Sony, not Screen Gems, they showed Total Recall, Looper, and Elysium. Elysium I knew nothing about. Looper I'd seen trailers, and Total Recall, as we know, it's, you know, the big Sony movie that comes out in a few weeks with Colin Farrell, the remake. It was weird. I thought Colin Farrell, he comes out and he's really charming, and all these people, if anybody's ever been to the Comic-Con panel, you always have people asking questions at the end. And they're doing like three movies for like within 2 hours. So they were basically showing a big clip, director would talk a little, and then you questions and answer. And everybody would come up and be like, because Kate Beckinsale and Jessica Biel are the two women in the movie. And they'd be like, oh my God, you're the, you know,
the
most beautiful women. But my question is for Colin. And so then they would ask, and like three guys in a row did that. But my question is for Colin. Like, because of course everyone wants to know, like, did you ever think of doing an accent? Like an Austrian accent. And he said that he thought about it for 7 minutes. And everyone's like, do the accent, do Arnold. But he didn't. He's like, oh, no. But he was really funny. But I have to say.
Completely aside, because that made me think of something.
The thing that just made me think of is when I was in the Firefly panel, which I'll talk about later, Nathan Fillion did a spot on James T. Kirk. It was quite funny.
Really? Wow.
Continue.
So I guess overall, of course, you know, Total Recall comes out in a few weeks, and I hope it's really good. But I have to say that, like, Len Wiseman, who does the Underworld movies with his wife, Kate Beckinsale, and of course, Paul W. Anderson with his wife, Mila Jovovich, does the Resident Evil movies. And I don't know, you know, Total Recall, like, I think it looks good, but honestly, besides Colin Farrell being funny, the biggest crowd pleaser was Bryan Cranston showing up, because he's in the movie as the guy who's in the movie as basically the guy who's trying to ultimately catch him and stuff. He's not the heavy. But of course he comes and everyone's like, Heisenberg! and then this one guy came out and was like, I have a question. He's just like, oh, by the way, you're awesome and How I Met Your Mother. And Brian's like, what? He's like, oh, you're, what's his name's dad and How I Met Your Mother? He's like, of all the roles to pick, he's like, well, thank you. It's just funny that I was like, I forgot he was, no, he's Jason Segel's boss. That's what it is. He plays his boss in How I Met Your Mother.
And so that was, but he was like, what?
Yeah, and he was actually the guy that I was in line with while I was waiting in line. So I've always thought the Resident Evil movies are just kind of fun, you know? They don't take themselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. Then I'm listening to Len Wiseman, the Total Recall guy, and I just...
Totally takes it too seriously?
It's not that he takes it too seriously. I guess I just felt like I didn't think what he was bringing to the table sounded that clever. He was just more like, oh, well, I want to... Basically, somebody asked a question, well, you could do Total Recall as a mystery, you can do it as a comedy, or you can do it as just an all-out action movie. And he's like, how are you doing it? And he was like, oh, I think I want to do it. He's like, I think my decision was to kind of do it as a mystery. Which is weird to me, because I'm like,
we all know
the end of Total Recall. Like, right. So that's not really the... And I can understand not doing the comedy, because Total Recall already is a... Like, I totally get that, saying no. But it just... I don't know. I just get the... I don't get me wrong. I hope Total Recall is good, and I want to see it. But when I was watching that, I was kind of like, all right. You know? Then the Looper panel comes out. That's the guy who did Brick, and he's a low-budget director. And he talks about Primer, which is a big time, low-budget time machine movie that I really love. And he comes out, Joseph Gordon-Levitt comes out, and he gets the crowd excited. He's like, hey! He's like all into it. Emily Blunt, I guess the woman, and they show this scene where it's Bruce Willis talking to Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and it's really good, man. What would that be like to be chasing yourself and what that world? It just really sounds like, oh, they're really interested in telling this story. Then Elysium comes out, and that's
I knew nothing about
Elysium. At Comic-Con a few years ago, Neil Blomquist with Peter Jackson came out with a movie called District 9 that blew everybody away, and this is his follow-up. I was like, oh my god, it's the guy who did District 9?
That's your favorite. One of your favorite movies.
It is. I came out the same year as Avatar. I loved it. So he comes out, and the guy who was in, who's like a nobody, the guy who's the lead in District 9, he's in it. Matt Damon's the star, but he's in it. The crowd like goes crazy. It looks good, man. It's basically basic premise, once again, political, just like District 9. And so basically the planet Earth has gotten bad. There's like, you know, diseases, war, everyone's in terrible shape. So all the rich people go to this satellite called Elysium. There's no war, there's no, everyone's rich, you can have everything you want, there's no disease.
So separation of the poor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt Damon is a like dock worker, and already him dealing with the politics of his job is like funny, but also kind of grungy. And basically something happens to him on the job where he gets hit with something, and the machine's like, you have, well, you know, four days to live. And so he's going to be dead in 4 days. And he's like, unless I can get to Elysium, because Elysium can cure everything. So now he needs to get off the planet and get to Elysium. That's basically the plot. And I got to say, man, it blew Total Recall. I mean, I was just like, wow, this looks really good. It looked really, like.
Well, how long do you have to wait?
It's 2013.
All right, so today, the community panel was awesome.
I thought you weren't going to the community panel because you weren't getting there early enough.
I did. I got
there. I thought
you
were going to do it, and you said, nah, I'm not going to do it. Like,
well, I said I wasn't going to do press. And we got kicked out of community press anyway, so it doesn't even matter.
Okay, so the community, did they... Obviously, the elephant's room with Dan Harmon. What did they say?
Well, that was the thing that was weird. For, like, the first half of the panel, they didn't mention his name. And somebody from the crowd, like, yelled, we love Dan Harmon! And then everybody acted like they didn't hear him, and it kept going. And then finally... I don't know if it was Joel McHale or I want to say it was Joel. He finally was like, Dan Harmon did this and this and this, and gave him credit for, you know, working on the shows and how great his work was. But like before that, it was like everybody was afraid to say his name. and the two new executive producers were up there, but nobody cheered them because we don't know who they are.
Well, I heard they've worked on two other shows that aren't that big of a deal, but I will say this. While I'm nervous about the two new showrunners, I heard that the two main writers, who I think either one or both of them actually worked on Arrested Development, they're still there. So I feel like, okay, well, if the main writers are still there, that's still good.
Yeah, that was one thing that I learned, because they had the two executive producers, plus two of the writers were on stage, plus the cast. So it was a really big panel. And it was pretty awesome. Like, they gave everybody blow-up pillows for some reason, which I was trying to use because I was really tired. But they showed the gag reel, and part of the gag reel was she did a rap. She just like freestyled a rap just right on the set.
Was she good? Is she doing in character as Annie, or the actress is doing a rap?
I don't know, actually. It was
so
a blooper.
Costume,
right, it was a blooper. So, like, they were just hanging out on the set, just talking, and then, like, Abed, or Troy. Troy started.
Oh, wait, I'm thinking of Britta. No, it's Annie.
It's Annie.
Oh, actually, that could be pretty funny. I mean, yeah. It could be. I don't know. Was it funny?
It was funny.
What's the song?
I don't remember it now. She, like, ad-libbed it.
So it's not like she was doing Eminem or something?
No. She's ad-libbing a song, which made it actually kind of amazing.
Oh, that's very awesome.
And so it was Troy was doing
the
beat.
Clip. So she didn't do it on stage.
Right. And so, but then, once they played the clip, everybody wanted her to do it on stage. So Danny, who plays Abed, started doing a beat. He's like, I got the beat. And so he started doing a beat. She was like, what part of I am not about to rap on this stage did you not understand? And so then Abed was like, not Abed, good Lord. Danny said, Purdy, right? Yeah. He said that him and Joel were going to do a rap. Because apparently he knew the Christmas rap that they had done together on an episode that I don't remember exactly. So he did the whole Christmas rap, and he did it pretty accurately, except that he messed it up at the end. It was so funny. He's like, he did the whole rap, and then towards the end he started slowing down, and then he started mumbling the last bit of the words. And then Joel was like, yeah, that's like his thing was he just put a stamp on it. He didn't do his half of the rap at all. It was pretty, all that was great. Like, the chemistry that they have on stage is like the chemistry that they have on the screen.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they're really tight.
You could tell.
Yeah.
Cool.
So that was a really good panel. Then after that panel, the big thing was the Firefly reunion. And I have to say that was the most emotional panel that I've been to.
Wait, I don't want any haters, but I like Firefly. I totally like it. What was emotional? No one died or anything. What's the emotional?
What do you mean by nobody died?
Did someone die?
You mean like there? No, nobody died during the panel.
So what's the emotional?
It has nothing to do with anything about anybody dying in real life or anything like that. It was more, they were just kind of really moved by the fact that there were people that got in line at 5 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. And Adam Baldwin at 11 o'clock at night last night went through those guys and signed autographs and hung out with them and talked. 3 o'clock in the morning, Joss Whedon got up, or he hadn't gone to bed yet, and went down there, and everybody who was there at 3 o'clock in the morning, he hung out with them and signed autographs, took pictures. And then once the panel started, the room was filled with like 4,500 people, the room capacity, and there were 4,000 people they couldn't get in.
Oh.
So it was just like, holy crap. You know, and they were kind of really, it's like this show's been off the air for 10 years. And they were very moved by how much the fans really, really cared about the show. And then they talked about the fact that they inspired Joss to not give up on the show. And Nathan was saying that when he would talk to him, he would see this kind of crazed determination in his eyes, like he had never seen it before. And Joss said the process of getting Serenity made was the closest he's ever had to an actual nervous breakdown. Like, he said he literally almost lost his mind trying to get that made. And he found out what could be done with absolute determination, that you will not take no for an answer. And he said that's how he got the movie made.
I'm so surprised. Like,
well, and that's the thing, is that's what they were talking about. Like, that was one of the things they were talking about, was like, what made this show, of all the shows that have been canceled at 13 episodes, what is it about this show that made the fans insane about it and never give up on it? And just,
and the answer is
intangible. The whole point I was making was, when it got emotional, Nathan lost it first. Like, because Nathan, when he first sat down, because it was really emotional having all those people cheering for them,
And so Nathan started choking up a little bit, and he was like, I'm going to be manly. I refuse to cry. And he was fine until people started talking about that, and then Nathan lost it. He was crying. And so then Joss is trying to talk and answer the question, and then Joss starts crying.
Yeah, but what, I don't understand. What?
You had to be in the room, man.
Yeah, so.
It was really just like, it was very touching. The fact that it's 10 years later, the show's been off the air for so long, yet that room was full and people couldn't get in there.
That is crazy.
You know, and it's just like, somebody said, and somebody actually asked Tim Minear, like, it's like, in 50 years, do you think people are still going to be watching Firefly? And he was like, yeah. Somebody asked Joss if he could do any show and his own take on the zombie genre, because everybody's doing zombies. They're
Have
like,
you ever been zombies on Buffy?
Not zombies. There's
not some kind of blah monster.
No, not really, because they're vampires. The point was, if he could do a zombie TV show or a zombie movie, what would his spin be on the zombie thing? And he said it was like, he thought of it like that. Like, that's what I love about.
He might have been thinking this, but go ahead. What was it?
Basically, he said that the reason that people like zombie movies is because zombies are like fodder. Their thing is, you shoot them in the head, done, keep moving. You don't think about it because you know that that's it.
And there's more coming.
Right. He said that the difference would be there's a cure for the zombies, affliction. So if you can treat the person, then you can heal them. But they're still trying to eat your brains. So do I shoot you in the head? Or do I run from you?
I guess you go with what you got. If the gun's there, like, you know, or if the cure's over there, then go for the... I guess that would be what it comes up with.
Yeah, so he said he makes it more complicated because you can't just be like, oh, they're dead, they're a lost cause, just keep moving. You can't do that now. And he said that his thing is complicate the zombie movie. After the Firefly panel, what did I go to? I did press. I did press for Spartacus. Season 2 is called Vengeance, and season 3 is War of the Damned. But they basically, Starz told them this is the last season. So I guess the ratings with the new guy was not as good as they were hoping. I know, it is. And I know a lot of people that didn't watch, but he's fine. Like, I don't think he's as good, but he's fine, and the story is still really good. And I watch it for the story, so...
Oh, the prequel one. That's a different guy.
No, it's not a different... Well, it's a prequel,
No. The prequel, there is no Spartacus.
Right.
But there's a different lead actor, is what I'm
saying. And he's fine. He's Gannicus was great.
This guy's actually playing Spartacus.
Right. And so the new season is 6 months. So because they got told this is our last season, and Steve DeKnight said he really appreciated that they told him that. So the whole season is about wrapping everything up, which is not going to be good, because if you know your history, it does not end well for the crew of Spartacus. So the new season jumps in time about a year. And so, because at the end of the last season, he ended up with maybe 50 or 60 soldiers with him. Or not soldiers, but slaves that he had trained into being soldiers. And it was them training them or whatever. And so when we come back, there are 600,000 that are under his command. And then go. And it has Julius Caesar in it. So there you go, your Rome connection.
So what was your next panel?
So then after that was... I went to Joss's Dark Horse panel, actually.
Oh, the comics? Buffy?
Well, it wasn't just... It just says Joss Whedon, Dark Horse. But literally, all he did was he got up on stage and was like, ask me whatever you want. He was like, I don't care. It's like, whatever I'm... Mike, he was like, comics, TV shows, movies.
Can do that. I think Kevin Smith could do that, too.
Was like,
which is like, man, let's just talk for 40 minutes. Let's just ask me anything he wants.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so he was like...
Wait, you didn't tell me. What was the newsroom?
Well, it wasn't actually... He didn't actually say newsroom. He basically... Somebody said, in 30 seconds or less, Joss, what do you think of the political system? And I can't remember exactly how the question was worded, but I was like, in 30 seconds? You know, I thought? I was like, what? And he went on for about 5 minutes. It was almost like the tirade in Newsroom, except that Joss has never been, you know, nobody really had to push him to make his tirade.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were saying he was making like a spoof about the dialogue in Newsroom.
Oh, he wasn't spoofing it. He had a Newsroom moment. Like,
what did he say?
He was basically...
I'm assuming he's not pro-Romney. Was it about the presidency?
No. It was about governments and the left and the right and how he's seeing that the government is shifting in this point, that they're slowly taking away rights and moving people to almost a serfdom, where you have the very, very rich and the very, very poor. And he said, which is going to then lead to revolution. he was actually pointing out the different steps that the government will take to get to a certain point back to democracy. He just like broke everything down. It was pretty cool. Like after it was, I was like, oh my God, you have to totally, because I thought you would totally love that.
I want to hear it.
Yeah. So I'm sure someone recorded it on put it on YouTube, but it was all pretty good. So after that was Breaking Bad. And the highlight...
So they didn't show the new episode?
No, they showed this awesome trailer.
Because it's only in 2 days.
I know.
They'd show the... Because sometimes they do that, right? Cons will be like, and hey, we're going to show you an episode. They'll do that kind of stuff.
Yes. This is not that time.
Okay. Because that would have been awesome if you got to see the episode already.
Well, then you would have shown up, wouldn't you?
Probably. But go ahead. So what did they show?
They showed a trailer for the coming season.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm assuming it looks good. Like,
it was awesome. It's like the trailer starts off with, you know, remember Mike? Mike was the cleaner that worked for the Chicken Man.
Yes, he was good. I like him.
He is. So the trailer starts off with him driving down the road looking really determined, and then another car driving and it looks like they're gonna crash, but then they actually just pass each other, and then they spin out to a stop, and it's Mike in one car and Jesse and Walt in the other car, and Mike just wants to kill him because he killed Gus. You know?
How does he know?
Of course he knows. Who would have the balls to blow up Gus?
Well, I was about to say, but I don't think they left any evidence or anything. But yeah.
But Mike knows that that Gus was trying to. They both knew they were trying to kill each other. That wasn't a secret. So Mike knows that Gus is. So it's like this whole thing, and they're almost doing a shootout. And Jesse tried, because Jesse's actually friends with Mike, so he's trying to stop it. He's like, listen to his pitch. So basically.
Well, don't tell me if they... there's no way they would show you if someone gets killed.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
But basically, they show that Walt is trying to get Mike as his enforcer. Because he knows he can't do the stuff that Mike can do.
Of course.
And Mike knows the whole...
Tried to get Mike before, though.
Yes, but that's because Mike liked Gus more, and Gus was more powerful.
Right.
Now... That's all hell Heisenberg. And so now he's like, I am
so
now
looks
the...
like they haven't missed a beat. It looks, the quality of the writing,
oh man,
is really good.
Then the trailer ends with, you know, the money man, laundry guy, the lawyer, I forgot his name.
I love that guy.
Yeah, he was
Saul.
Yeah, Saul. Saul was like, this is too much, I'm out. And then they show Walt get like way up in his face. And Walt says, you're done when I say you're done. But he's the menace behind his voice was fantastic.
So he's really become the villain.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Well, he's already was the villain with poisoning a child and everything.
Well, what Vince Gillian said, that he's like, we just finished an episode where I think this is the point where Walt becomes irredeemable. I was like, what? Now? Now you think he's irredeemable? But yeah, it was pretty good. Like, the trailer was really good.
We're only getting half a season, right?
Right. But the best thing, they came out in their cook suits, like in the big white and the yellow.
That's awesome.
And even with the masks on and everything, both him and Jesse, oh God, Aaron, is his name Paul? It's Paul.
Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Aaron Paul, thank you. And Bryan Cranston, they both came out in the full get up onto the stage. And I was like, holy crap. But I was trying to get a picture, but the crowd went nuts.
Wait, and you just saw Chicken Man here?
Yeah, he was walking
Although
through.
He probably wasn't the biggest. He's dead.
No, he's on Revolution. He's the main guy on Revolution. Big freaking symbol over there.
Isn't he also on Once Upon a Time?
Yeah, but I figure he's probably not going to do Once Upon a
Has
Time.
Has anybody seen Revolution? Didn't you say that they show a lot of pilots?
They've already shown it.
And?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, speaking of, multiple people, somebody at the Resident Evil panel said, I just saw the show Cults. It's the best thing I've ever seen.
Really?
And I was like, that's not what I've heard. Then I'm in line at Hall H, and this girl's like, nah, this thing Cults, it's not that great. And then like later in line, this guy's like, oh, this thing Cults is pretty good. I'm like, what is the deal with this? I'm like, okay, clearly I have to see the show. I have to make up my own mind. Very divided. The girl, her point was, she just thought it was so clever, and like she didn't know what was going to happen next. She couldn't guess what was going to happen. And then the other was pretty person who didn't like it, I was like, let me ask you, I'm like, it's a CW show? She's like, yeah. I'm like, so when you say it's a reality, it looks like CW reality. She's like, it does. I'm like, so it doesn't really look like reality. She's like, no, not at all. I was like, is there anybody in it? And she said, oh, she's like, well, the guy from Vampire Diaries who just died. I was like, oh, I like him. I was like,
I said the same thing, and that's why I watched it as long as I did, and then I was like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
I gotta see this show. Now I have to see. If it's that, I mean, if I hate, if it's that love, I'm curious. I have to make up my own mind. I'm very curious.
That's true. I mean, I didn't think it was gonna be polarizing. I just thought everybody's gonna hate it. So
I mean, so you liked it worse than Secret Circle pilot, which I thought was okay.
I finished the Secret Circle pilot.
That's true.
And I watched the next few episodes of Secret Circle. You'd have to put me at gunpoint.
To be fair,
4 seasons ago or whenever. How many seasons of Vampire Diaries? 3 or 4?
Three.
3 seasons ago, I remember you and I both, I could have swore, didn't get through the pilot.
No, I finished the pilot.
See, I don't think I did. I was like, eh, this is just so cool. This isn't for me. And then somewhere along the line, people were like, no, just watch it. It gets better. And I said, all right, fine. And then it did, and it's awesome. So in theory, I don't know, maybe cults. You always say, look, pilots can be weird. You know,
that's
it doesn't always
true,
work.
But the actual, the reason I thought Vampire Diaries might be good is I like vampires. Okay? And that's true. It just looks silly, but I do like vampires.
Well, I like murder mysteries. I heard that's what the cult is. It's a murder mystery.
But
it sounds like it could be okay.
But it's so meta that it's so aware of itself.
It's Cabin in the Woods.
No, but it's not like Cabin in the Woods. You keep saying that, and I'm like, no, it's not like Cabin in the Woods.
When she says, you keep saying that, we've said that off podcast. well, I mean, in the way that Cabin in the Woods, it's about these guys who take teenagers or take young people and make them into the stereotype of a horror movie, and we as an audience know, oh, she's the blonde bimbo, he's the cool guy. Like we're very aware of the horror trope. But you're saying, well, in cults, it would be more like they're watching a movie called Cabin in the Woods or something like that, right?
Right.
I guess, but you can see how Cabin in the Woods is kind of meta, though.
It is.
That quality is there.
It is, but it's not. You're not. It's not like, and then I wink at the camera. It's not quite like that. Like this thing is so meta that it's like it's a show that wants to be a cult hit, so much that it actually calls itself the cult.
It's bad.
And it's you start watching it and you think you're watching a cop show, but then you pull back. You watch a cop show about murder mysteries and you pull back and it's about the fans that watch the murder mystery who then get murdered. Well, I mean, and then it's just like, really? Come on.
I mean, as Joss Whedon learned with his movie Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's very hard to do something that's intentionally something. Like, it's intentionally campy. It's intentionally winking at the audience. Because if you it doesn't it's hard to pull that off because
right.
The Buffy movie's not very good.
I agree.
You know, like, but the show, so who knows, maybe the pilot cult, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen it. All I'm saying is I want to see it now. I'm like, I want to see it. I mean, don't get me wrong, if you ask me that or Revolution, I'm going to watch Revolution, but I'm curious about it. So,
well, the other thing is Beauty and the Beast is the
that's what I had curious about. Beauty and the Beast.
Well,
you grew up watching that show, though.
I did. And
you
this,
like, well, Smallville.
Well, I don't like Kristen Kluick or whatever her name is, but that's not even the problem. Her being in the show was a problem enough for me in the first place, where I was like, yeah, I don't need to watch this show. But then what I found out is they don't understand the concept of Beauty and the Beast, in that she's pretty and he's pretty.
But he's a beast.
He's pretty. Have you seen the picture? The picture of them on the cover for Beauty and the Beast, it's two really good-looking people.
Oh, no. Okay, you're saying that's not the concept. I'm sorry, you're saying how you're describing the concept of Beauty and the Beast.
Right, I'm telling you the concept.
The hideous man who hides in the shadows, befriends a beautiful woman. That's the concept of Beauty and the Beast.
Yes, but that's not what this show is about.
So he's not disfigured or anything?
What they do is they say that he went to war and got hit with some sort of special drug or chemical compound or toxin, so that when he gets angry, he turns beast-like to fight, but then he immediately turns back to himself.
Well, so he's the Hulk.
Yes, except he doesn't break out of his clothes and he's still in control.
It just doesn't sound like Beauty and the Beast.
Exactly my point. So her falling in love with him means nothing because he's a good-looking guy. So I'm like, all right.
Two Beauty and the Beast being made?
No, two of them were pilots, but only one of them went to series.
And were there two new Sherlock Holmes or just one? Elementary's coming.
There was only one Elementary.
Did they show that here?
Yes.
People like it?
It's
hard for us because of the BBC one.
Well, the Susie, who is the biggest BBC fan ever of Sherlock, she saw it, and she thought that it was really entertaining. It's a fun show.
I like Johnny Lee Miller.
And she said it's good, he's entertaining, but she was enjoying it, and she forgot he was supposed to be Sherlock. She said there's nothing in the show that makes you think he's Sherlock until he answers the phone and goes Sherlock Holmes, and she was like,
he doesn't solve crime in a weird way that is, I mean, that's...
But I mean, we watch so many shows on American TV now where the person's...
The mentalist,
and now they got this new guy named Perception. You got all these shows where whoever saw Monk did it.
Is Psych, did you say that's like Sherlock? Doesn't he also figure out stuff?
He's super aware, on Psych, he's super aware of details. So that's how he solves crime, because he notices everything.
Supposedly there's an episode of Psych where the characters are saying something, and they're like, have you seen The Mentalist? That's what we do, or something like that. It's just funny, because isn't Psych older than The Mentalist?
Yes. That's actually why I didn't watch The Mentalist first. This is a continuation of my on-the-fly podcast from San Diego Comic-Con, and I'm sitting here with some of my fellow San Diegoers, and we're going to talk about some of the panels and things that we saw over the course of Comic-Con. We're at the end of it. It is Sunday. We are dying and exhausted, so excuse that. Also, we're in a restaurant, so sorry for the noise. First up, we have...
James from Bloomfield, New Jersey.
And also we have...
Industry Geek Gal from New York.
And we're going to go through some of the different things, panels we went through. First up, we're going to talk about We're going to talk about 666 Park Avenue. And take it away, James.
Interesting piece. I was curious as to whether or not it was just ABC's take on American Horror Story. But when I saw it, it's actually quite fun. It sort of reminded me a little bit of Friday 13th, the series, some flavor of it, you know, the whole idea of the cursed things type of thing. But in this case, instead of it being an anthology, it had more of a direct storyline, specific characters, with a little bit of that idea of the horror anthology. So each element there. Sorry.
Well, no, I was going to just ask you, what did you think of Terry O'Quinn? Because he's the one I'm most excited to see.
He was very interesting. I have to admit that I did not really watch Lost, but I knew that he was on there, and I'd seen him previously in earlier genre films, and I thought he was strong. And Vanessa Williams was very interesting as well. I think they did a nice job as the couple with the mysterious background, and you're in the realm of almost a Needful Things type of thing, the Stephen King, where you have something due to me because I don't want to give away too much to the folks out there, but where you are now signed a contract type of thing, and now you owe me type of thing. And also another Stephen King, remind me of another Stephen King piece, the hotel piece with John Cusack and Samuel Jackson. I want to say 1604 or something. I forgot. I would have to IMDb.
Yeah.
But there's a cursed hotel. It's not that. But
yeah.
But that said, it looked intriguing, and it was shot really well. The effects were really good, and it was intriguing enough.
So the big question is, are you going to watch it in the fall?
Yes, I am. I think I'll pop in for it. I have to admit that I have not watched too many shows consistently as they've aired, except for Fringe. But I do like popping in for the online if I don't do anything else, or the on-demand. I'm a big on-demand person. We got a 10-year-old. I work a lot of crazy hours, so my big thing is VODing stuff and that type of thing.
All right, so now you guys heard that word. The next pilot that we're going to talk about is Arrow, or The Arrow. And I talked about it a little bit before because I saw it a while ago. But I'm really curious to find out what other people, now that everybody else, some other people have seen it, what you guys think. For me, the big thing was that you have a superhero that if somebody discovers his secret identity, he snaps your neck. I was like, that is awesome. I really like their take on a kind of a dark hero, especially on the CW, because I didn't really think they'd have the guts to do that.
I have to say I agree. When I first heard about it, and I'd seen I was an avid viewer of Smallville, but I'd seen the few segments they had with the Green Arrow and so on, and I was curious whether they're going to make it a little corny. Is his costume look corny? You know, it's hard to translate stuff from the comics to the screen. And then I said, how are they going to deal with it? And, you know, ultimately, as much as I love Batman and the like, they're bad guys on the street. You should be getting rid of them, you know, if you're going to go that extreme, because otherwise you have the police to do that. And the fact that he went that distance and became this revenge thing, in fact, someone mentioned that the plot was almost like ABC's Revenge, but with a superhero spin on it. My only problem is, as cool as it was overall, especially the stunts, which don't always translate well to television, they don't always have the right stunt coordinators, or the way they shoot it doesn't always work. This really worked. My one qualm is, does anyone not recognize the guy under the hood? I mean, his face has been splattered all over the television as newly found and discovered from 5 years missing. A little green spray paint over your eyes doesn't hide you. You should do a real mask, you know, at least then. But that said, it was fun to watch. I am intrigued. I will definitely watch more.
That was exactly my thought when I was watching it, because he doesn't even wear a mask on his face to cover his eyes. He literally just puts a little hand paint over his eyes to make his eyes look kind of dark, and he's wearing just a hood, and there's a point where he grabs one of the guys and he pulls him just right up into his face, and I'm like, okay, why doesn't that guy recognize him? He's in all the papers, he's on the news right now. That like makes no sense.
Maybe he should wear the glasses Superman wears, you know?
Yeah. Maybe he should wear the glasses that Clark Kent wears, and then he'll be safe.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea. All right, so next we're going to talk about the Nikita panel. I didn't get to go see it. I'm not caught up on Nikita. I've only seen season one of that show.
Well, the Nikita panel was pretty interesting. There was a major change at the end of the second season, with the departed now, Percy. So there was talk about how they were going to fill that void of sort of the big bad. And basically, Melinda Clark's character is probably going to take up a lot of slack. It's, you know, she's taken a few hits over the last couple seasons in her quest for power. So we're going to see her rise up again. Also, there was a big question about Nikita and Michael and the romance, and then the romance department there, if there were going to be some developments. And there were some jokes about a possible shower scene, and the difficulties of shooting a shower scene. So we have that to look forward to in the romance department for Nikita. But still going to be a lot of the action and fast-paced. I don't know, fast-paced stuff as usual.
All right, thanks. Next up, we're going to talk about sci-fi's Defiance. And my biggest question about this show is, what is it? We're literally sitting in their restaurant. It says Defiance everywhere, and I know nothing about the show.
I think the title sort of suggested, I mean, obviously, in one sense, where the, you know, striking back against the forces of from beyond type of thing. I mean, it's in the realm of, I can imagine, if you think about classic science fiction, H.G. Wells playing off that whole idea of the War of the Worlds and the group that H.G. Wells meets Red Dawn, you know, type of thing. There's one town that's deciding to fight back against the forces that have now dominated the Earth. Or you think about, and then not so much the walkers and stuff directly, although we saw that in the trailer, but in that realm. Or Christopher, whatever his name's thing, the tripods, which is also based off of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
But basically the idea with the show, which I think is an interesting concept, beyond the whole, you know, invading forces coming to Earth and these last vestiges fighting back, and, you know, which is also, what, Falling Skies? no offense. But also, I think what's interesting that they're doing as a grand experiment is this cross-platform storytelling, which is that there will be a story that's played out through the series, episode by episode, but also sections of that story will also be played out in the game form. And elements will cross back and forth. And there's one town here in the game and one town there on in the live action element. And they're communicating and so on. And then you as a player will get story bits that will be in the show, but also that will pop up in the game. And if you can obviously watch the what I gathered, you can watch the show and get the show and get the story. But if you played the game, you get that much more experience and information. And theoretically, little things that you do in the game in mass can affect storytelling on the show. Except in killing off main characters. That will be left up to the discretion of the writers and so on like that. But other little things, it sort of reminds me of what the Wachowskis did and Joel Silver did with The Matrix in the last two films, which aren't as great as the first movie, but that said, in terms of the cross-media storytelling, they did a really great burst in that direction, which is that if you watch the movies, you get a lot. But if you play the games, you get so much more in terms of storytelling. And if you watch the anime, which they did, the Animatrix, you get a whole nother level. And then the graphic novels had another level of information. I think they're probably going to do it like that. And it'll be an interesting experiment, I think, in terms of that whole cross-media storytelling, transmedia storytelling. And if it's successful, it can make a difference. Now, if only sci-fi would do that for their Saturday Night Monster movie stuff, meaning high production value, good storytelling, you got an audience, you got the time slot, why not make proper use of it?
Hey, TV Campfire on the fly, slightly better environment this time. So we have a new podcaster for us.
I'm the Button Lady.
From?
Comic-Con.
I was going to say, how about Los Angeles?
Okay.
All right. So you went to a bunch of different panels starting, you did the whole Hall H thing.
I did.
So the first panel was Fringe.
Oh, yeah. Fringe was fun. Do you want to know what they talked about with the show?
Yeah. And just like, was it a good environment? Did you have a good time?
Oh, they enjoy each other. They really do. They, I don't watch the show myself, but they really enjoy each other's company, and they were having a lot of fun on the panel and teasing each other mercilessly. Let's see. There's
you don't remember anything because you don't watch the show, so nothing stuck with you, is what you're trying to say.
Oh, I know. One very important thing that did stick with me. There was a point where the lead actor, and the producer, J.H.
Are you talking about Joshua Jackson as a lead actor?
Joshua Jackson as a lead actor, but there was a producer or director named J.H.
Keep going.
He was saying that we shouldn't complain about Fox as a network because they might cancel certain shows or something. And Joshua Jackson did Firefly. That made the crowd laugh very hard. At one point they were there was a question from the audience, and they were asked what scenes that they were not in really meant something to them from some of the other actors. And Torv was crying when she was talking about scenes, a scene with Astrid, with her father.
Oh.
And then the actress who played Astrid started crying as well. And the actress who played Astrid was talking about scenes with Anna Torv that made her cry, and the two of them were crying together. And then Lance Hendrick was talking about a scene, and he started crying, and he swore everyone to secrecy and begged them not to tell anybody that he cried. He wasn't acting, as far as I could tell. He was really crying from the scene that he was describing. And it was, again, it was Astrid's scene that made him cry when she saw her father again in something. But then everyone turned to John Noble and he said, "I too am sensitive."
That is fantastic. I had a different experience, mainly because I did press for French, which meant that, well, not just doing press for French meant I couldn't be in the room, but that meant I was in the press rooms, so I missed all the panels. But to your benefit, that means that those interviews will be online soon, so you can watch that. And one of the most interesting questions I will tease, I asked Anna Torv, we are now in an alternate timeline, and I asked her, you know, first half of the season, you're playing Olivia of the alternate timeline, but then halfway through, you get all your memories back of the other timeline, so now you're literally playing two different characters, two different memories. Halfway through the season, you split it up, and I was like, how did that feel? And her response was, I wish I had known that at the beginning of the season, because she was like, I didn't know that I was the same person from an alter. I thought I was a completely different Olivia, which is only you can have in the conversation about Fringe. And she's just like, I thought I was a completely different person. I didn't realize I was the same person, just with different memories of an alternate thing. And it was just like, she's like, I thought I was in a different universe. So she said she would have played it differently if she had known. So that's kind of interesting, because of course, in the podcast, I'd been arguing and telling everybody, I was like, she's in the right universe. I don't know why they think she's not. So that's actually kind of funny.
They did mention on the panel that all the alt-universe stuff is done.
Okay.
And Astrid...
Well, now we're in an alternate timeline in the future.
The lady who plays Astrid mentioned, too, that when she was playing alt-Astrid, that's how they were calling them.
Yes, that makes sense.
When she played alt-Astrid, she... she said it might seem to people that she didn't have a lot of emotion or a lot of depth, but there was a lot of tension in her character. And she said that when she would go home, she would feel everything all through her shoulders and her neck, and she'd be all tight, and she'd have to... She said she was so glad to be done with Alt Astrid, because now when she could go home, she could relax more.
Her character had... Did she talk about the condition her character had?
No.
She was... the children you work with. I'm blanking.
Autistic?
Her character was autistic.
Oh, okay.
All Astrid. That's the thing, is they said, normally the difference in the characters is that it's a choice that you make. One choice makes you different. But in this chat, they decided to make one gene different. So
very interesting.
So the all Astrid.
I need to watch this show. This panel even solidified it even more. And seeing the teaser trailer for the whatever I saw impressed me, and it has been impressing me little by little as I've heard friends talk about it. I need to sit down and watch this show.
It's fantastic. So you guys look out for the interviews that are going to go up pretty soon at weedonopolis.com. Okay, the next panel we're going to talk about would be Supernatural.
Okay.
So tell me about that, because, again, I was stuck in press. Not that it was a hardship being stuck in press, but I totally missed the panel.
Those guys are funny. And I... Jared Padalecki won't let anyone have any peace. And the moderator tried to ask a couple questions that were honestly kind of lame questions. And, you know, like, what's going to happen next? He kept on asking each actor, what's going to happen next for your character? And if you know anything about the industry, you know the actors don't know that. Or if they do, the first thing they have to do is look at the writers and say, can I say something? Ben Edlund was on the panel, and so all these questions should have gone to Ben Edlund, but they didn't. The moderator kept on asking the actors, you know, Jim Beaver, are you alive? Anything is possible, they kept on saying. Anything is possible. Is Castiel alive? Are you going to bring Castiel back? And Jared kept on, anytime something was mentioned that someone couldn't answer immediately, Jared Padalecki would lean to the mic, is Castiel coming back? Is Castiel coming back? Jared was the king of that panel, because Jim Beaver wore a red shirt.
He said, I actually talked to him in press about that, and he said that if he could have gotten the Star Trek emblem and put it on his shirt, he would have, because he was like, yes, I have a red shirt and I would be killed over and over again.
And I forget exactly word for word what Mark Shepard said, but he made, oh, they were making a some joke about trying to find the plural of apocalypse.
Apocalypse.
A couple said apocalypse. A couple said apocalyptical. And they asked a fan who was at the microphone, and the fan didn't have a clue either. Apocalyptic. Added a few more syllables, and they kept on throwing that one back and forth again. One fan asked who their superhero names should be, and Misha said his would be Ass Butt Butt.
That's a reference to the finale of season 5.
Let's see. I think someone mentioned that their superhero name was Apocalyptical, something like that. But let's see, what else? Are there any women on that panel? Mark Shepard made a reference to that Apocalyptical was a villain on Doctor Who. And of course, that crowd being the same crowd who was going to sit and in 45 minutes be watching the Doctor Who panel, that crowd was the right crowd to make that joke reference to.
You know, speaking of which, as we actually, I think, move on to Doctor Who, that is the only panel I'm sad I missed, because I didn't get Doctor Who press. I didn't see the Doctor Who panel. So I feel, and currently I'm wearing my Doctor Who shirt, because I brought it because I thought I was going to go to the panel. But Comic-Con has become, you choose. So at the last, once I got here, someone's like, oh, you can do Supernatural and Lost Girl press, but if I do them, I can't do the panels. So what do you choose? What do you do? So if you choose, oh no,
it's essentially choosing a performance or an interaction.
Yes, it really is.
And the performance is great, but it's not personal. And the interaction is personal, but it's not a performance.
Right, like Anna Torv looked directly at me and spoke to me and answered my question very sitting across the table, and you don't get that in a panel. And yeah, you can make an impression on
but
them.
But they were, I mean, how PG or R-rated is this?
It's PG.
They were making some references on the stage to a certain word that would be inappropriate here.
Yeah, I can imagine.
It referred to, I'm not going to go any further than that. Search for it on YouTube if you can.
All right, let's move on to Doctor Who. So, yes, Doctor Who panel, what gives?
The crowd really screamed nicely for Arthur Darvill, being that this is probably his one and only visit to Comic-Con.
That's Rory, right?
That's Rory, yes. Stephen Moffat doesn't care one whit about what you want to know. Too damn bad. Because Chris Hardwick was the moderator, and he knows Doctor Who, and he's asking him, so you know Doctor Who's name? Because they did a compilation of some of the scenes from last season that will fall into what the next season is going to be about. Referring possibly to the fact that the oldest question is Doctor Who, what's his name?
Right.
And so someone asked, I think Chris Hardwick might have asked Matt, you know, so what's your name? And Matt said, I don't know. Steven, what's my name? And Steven looked at the crowd and said, I don't care if you want to know. I know. Yes, I know. And Matt looked at the crowd and said, see, this is what we live with. This is what we live with every day. Karen made a point of letting everyone know that she loves gingers.
Because she is ginger.
Yes, she is.
That just mean? Never mind. I don't know where I'm going with that sentence.
And Arthur Darvill did a Karen Gillan impression. Between Karen and Arthur, because they did confirm that again that they are leaving at the end of this next season. And when Chris Hardwick asked Stephen Moffat, how are they going to leave? Stephen Moffat turned to him and said, how do you think? Figure it out.
In a bloody mess.
Yeah, exactly. They were asked, you know, what are you going to be doing next? And Karen and Arthur agreed that they would tell what each other is doing next.
Oh.
So Arthur said with a Scottish accent that Karen was going to be doing next. And she just sat there and laughed because she's a giggler. And Karen tried to do Arthur. I think she tried one word and gave up. And she goes, I can't do you. Oh, no. what was it Arthur said? I don't know if this podcast is really about what they're going to be doing next, but Arthur Darvill is going to be in something with David Tennant.
Oh, that'll be cool.
At the beginning of the panel, the host voice that you hear over the speakers announced that someone had lost a sonic screwdriver.
And everyone has one.
Yeah. So. And the next question is, which one?
Well, I have a question for you. Aside from the panels, did you see any of the pilots?
No. I was going to see the pilot for Beauty and the Beast, but even the first 5 minutes of it, I was over it. The guy who's playing the Beast is going to be Mr. Gorgeous, and I don't know. I know you can do a story about inner beast or inner beauty and that sort of thing, and that can be a more cleverly written story. I don't see it being one. I watched 5 minutes of it, and I was not impressed.
That is pretty much my thought on that show, so I will not be tuning in either. All right, I think that's about it. Say goodbye, TV Campfire.
Bye, TV Campfire, from the Button Lady at Comic-Con 2012.
Woohoo!
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. If you have any feedback, you can send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. And listen to us on getthepointradio.com, Krypton Radio, Wheatonopolis, and iTunes. And we talk to you guys next week with the return of the standard episode of TV Campfire. Bye!